I want to show you one of the ugliest words in the English language. Here it is. You ready? Ungrateful. It's just an ugly word, isn't it? Nobody wants to be this, right? And the other thing about ungrateful is like some other things that we've talked about from time to time. Ungrateful is almost impossible to see in the mirror, right? You know when you're angry, and you know when you're afraid, you know when you're nervous. You might even admit at some point along the way that you feel insecure. This one, we don't ever see in the mirror. In fact, if anyone has ever told you that you're ungrateful, you immediately shot back. You immediately went into defense mode. You immediately told them they were wrong. And the reason when somebody tells you you're ungrateful or you're an ingrate or, you know, however they say it, and most of us haven't heard this since we were children because adults generally don't say to other adults, you're ungrateful. We tell other people that you're ungrateful, right? But we don't say it to your face. But as children, you know, no doubt you heard this all the time. You're so ungrateful. You're so ungrateful. And when somebody, and this is what's tricky about this word. When somebody tells us that we're ungrateful, we feel like they're accusing us of not feeling something. That's why we get so defensive when somebody tells us we're ungrateful. Somebody says to you, you're ungrateful, and we immediately get defensive because we think, wait a minute, I'm grateful, and then we begin to rehearse all of our grateful thoughts, all of our grateful feelings. Then we even start to feel even more grateful for the things they've told us we're ungrateful for, right? And by the time they're finished telling us we're ungrateful, we're feeling more gratitude than we felt in a long time, which makes us, you know, respond, hey, you're absolutely wrong. I'm a very grateful person, because we retreat to our grateful feelings and we retreat to our grateful thoughts. That's why this is really, really, really hard to see in the mirror. This is why this is something that we're very, very defensive about if anybody brings it up. This is why you could spend the rest of your life in your key relationships. You could spend the rest of your life in your key relationships and be this and never, ever know it. In fact, in an audience this large, there are people sitting next to people right now going, I'm so glad he or she is here. Some of you are thinking, I wish my kids were here. Others of you are thinking, I wish my husband, I wish my parents, I wish they were here, because you see it, but they don't. And the real odd thing is, some of you couples, you're both glad the other one's here. Because it's so easy to see in somebody else. It's almost, I'm telling you, this and its cousin, greed, ungrateful and greed are cousins, you know. And both greed and ungrateful are very, very difficult to see in the mirror. Now, this is a really important word, and it's a really important topic for a couple of reasons. Number one, gratitude, the opposite, obviously, of being ungrateful, gratitude generates generosity. And you know this. When you have been generous to someone and they've been grateful, you want to be more generous, don't you? When you've been generous to someone and they are not grateful, it kind of shuts you down. If you've ever worked with the homeless or the working poor, if you've ever done any kind of charity work, and where you deal with a whole lot of different people in the course of a day, it's so interesting. The people who are grateful, you want to be more generous. The people who just sort of take you for granted and feel somewhat entitled, you just kind of shut down toward them. It's a natural reaction. And this can happen at all levels of society. Gratitude generates even more generosity. But there's an even more important reason why this is an important word and why this is an important subject. Ingratitude not only shuts down generosity, ingratitude can shut down an entire relationship. In fact, some of you, again, if we were to read your mind or you were to tell us our story, your story in private, you would tell us a story about an ongoing relationship that used to be warm and full of life and full of, you know, emotion and, you know, passionate. And it shut down over time. And it shut down over time because the person that you are closest to or feel closest to or somebody in your family somewhere along the way, they begin to send you a signal. And this signal was simply this. They're just not grateful. And because of their ingratitude, you don't feel very generous when it comes to time or involvement or emotion or passion or whatever it is they expect from you. Because whereas gratitude generates generosity. Ingratitude doesn't simply stop the generosity. Ingratitude has the power to shut down an entire relationship. And the worst thing about it is we never know it's going on because we think we're grateful. We never know what's going on because it's almost impossible to see ungrateful in the mirror. We can see it in other people. But it's very, again, I've never met a person, and maybe you're an exception, and maybe you know people. I've never met anybody in all my years of counseling, all my years of premarital counseling, postmarital counseling, why'd you get married counseling, you know, all the different counseling I've done. I've never had anybody say, you know, the problem is, Andy, I think I figured out, I'm just ungrateful. Never heard, I've heard every, you know, people embrace and confess all kinds of things. Never have I heard I'm greedy or I'm ungrateful. Never heard it, because it's almost impossible to see. In fact, this could be at the heart or the center or the epicenter of your relational struggles right now with your parents, with your kids, with someone at work, or with your spouse. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about it now that I have your undivided attention. Now, what we're going to do, if you have a Bible and you'd like to follow along, we're going to be in Luke chapter 17. We're going to begin with verse, I think, 11. Luke chapter 17, verse 11. There's a little account of from the life of Jesus, a little narrative. And it's so interesting. I've never heard a sermon on this, but I heard this story when I was a child. In fact, if you've heard this story before, chances are you heard it as a child. It was one of those great vacation Bible school flannel graph stories, okay? It's one of those stories for children that's so easy to illustrate the importance of gratitude and so easy to illustrate the effect of ingratitude that we go there very quickly with our children. But I think there's a huge, huge, huge message here for those of us who are adults. Luke 17, we're going to jump in at verse 11. Here we go. Now on his way to Jerusalem, this was a big time and transition time in the life of Jesus. Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border, which meant he was trying to stay out of the public eye. He traveled on the border between Samaria and Galilee. Now as he was going into a village, 10 men, you heard this story maybe, 10 men who had leprosy met him. And they stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." Now, if you know anything about the Bible or Eastern, Middle Eastern culture or culture from a long ancient, any kind of ancient culture, you know that leprosy was a dreaded and feared disease. And people in this culture thought leprosy was contagious. So when somebody had any signs of leprosy, they were immediately put outside the community, generally in an area with other lepers. People were assigned to take them daily bread. People were assigned to take them food. But basically, the lepers all huddled together, and it was a horrible, horrible disease because immediately you became an outcast. You became an outcast from your family, from, you know, you couldn't hold a job. I mean, it was just terrible. Everywhere you went, in many cultures, you had to ring a bell or let people know you were coming. In this society, it meant you were a religious outcast. You were ceremonially unclean. You couldn't participate in temple worship. Basically, your life was destined to be, you would either live alone or your only contact, close human contact, would be with other people who had leprosy. So Jesus is out in this border area that's, you know, very sparsely populated. He's moving along, trying not to be seen by anybody. And all of a sudden, he hears these voices calling out, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." And when he saw them, he said, really interesting statement, when he saw them at a distance, you know, he's yelling at them like everybody else does. You know, everybody, you know, yells at these guys. That's just how they communicated. Jesus says from a distance, "Go show yourselves to the priest." Now, I got to explain this verse. Go show yourselves to the priest. Now, Jesus kind of did three things all in this one statement. First of all, according to the Old Testament law, you may know this, when a leper realized, "Hey, I think my leprosy's gone away," and every once in a while, mysteriously, leprosy would just go away. There was no cure. There was no real medical, there was nothing they could do medically for leprosy. But every once in a while, a person would just be magically or, you know, supernaturally cured of leprosy. But the first thing they did, they had to go to a priest, and a priest would check them out, and priest would declare, "This person can now integrate back into society." So Jesus says from a distance, "You guys, all 10 of you, go show yourself to the priest," which is odd because at that point they didn't have anything to show the priest except their leprosy, right? What Jesus was asking them to do was to do something we've been asked to do. He was asking them to walk by faith. Walking by faith is simply taking God at his word and doing what you would do if you believed God was going to keep a promise. That's what it means to walk by faith. So Jesus is saying, "Hey, you think you know who I am? You've called me Master and Lord. You've declared some kind of faith that I'm either a magician, I'm from God, or I'm maybe who I claim to be. So if you really believe who you say you believe I am, then I want you to go show yourself to the priest as an act of faith in the fact that I am who I claim to be." The other thing Jesus was doing was he knew when these lepers got to the priest, what's the priest gonna ask? How did this happen? I mean, if one leper shows up and the leprosy's gone, wow, that happens. Two, three, 10, all 10 of you suddenly are healed of leprosy, and they're all gonna say, oh yeah, you've heard of Jesus. He yelled at us like everybody else does, but he told us to come see you, and somehow on the way to see you, the leprosy all went away. So this is there's a lot going on. Very, very emotional time. And so all 10 of these guys, even though they still have leprosy, decide they're gonna make the journey into town, you know, ringing that bell or shouting whatever they had to shout for people to clear the path. They were gonna go find the priest and see if in fact Jesus had healed them. So here's what happens. When he saw them, When he saw them, he said, go show yourself to the priest. And as they went, in fact, they were cleansed. And then here's where the story gets interesting. One of them. Now this is where we remember the story, isn't it? One of them, not 10 of them, not 9 of them. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back. We call this guy the returner. He was the returner. He was the only one that on his way to see the priest realized, oh my goodness, and he started looking at that white skin and suddenly he's just, you know, he's all the sores are gone and all the stuff is gone and he's feeling things he hasn't felt in a long time and he stubbed his toe and actually felt it and all of a sudden the feeling's returning to all of his extremities and he realizes, I've been healed. And this one guy, one out of the 10, returns and he goes back to Jesus. He came back praising God in a loud voice. Now, it's at this point in the story as a child, the teacher stopped and made the point, hey, only one went back, why not all 10? But look what this guy does when he finally gets to Jesus. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And the Bible tells us he was a Samaritan. When he finds Jesus, he throws himself at Jesus' feet in this amazing, you know, display of gratitude, and he thanks Jesus. And Luke lets us know, and by the way, he wasn't even Jewish. He was a Samaritan. And after he finishes thanking Jesus, Jesus asks him a very important question. He says this, and Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Now, we're going to come back to this at the end of the message, but here is the tension that I think we all live with in many of our relationships as it relates to gratitude. Jesus points out that there's something wrong with this picture. Jesus points out that for only one of the 10 was the circle of gratitude closed. For the other 9, it's still open. Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? He goes on. Was no one found to return and give praise to God except for this foreigner? And then he said to him, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. End of story. Now, again, when you first hear this story or if you first read this story, this story was presented to you as a child, there's an emotional response, and the emotional response for all of us or for anybody who's reading this for the first time or heard it for the first time, the emotional response is, wow, those other 9 were so ungrateful, weren't they? Wow, only one was grateful. The other 9 were so ungrateful. How could they be so ungrateful? They just went on their merry way. Jesus just gave them their life back, gave them their family back, their career back, their future back. I mean, Jesus just gave them more than they'll ever be given again, and 9 of them went on their merry way, and only one was a returner. But the interesting thing about the story is we wouldn't think about this as a story of ingratitude if one hadn't returned. Because when you read the rest of the accounts of Jesus' life, he heals a lot of people who don't come back and say thank you. And we never think about this. He does amazing miracles for people, and there are very, very few accounts of people actually returning to Jesus to say thank you. Because the people in most of Jesus' miracles do exactly what we do. They take their toy and they run. They take their prize and they run. They're overwhelmed with the fact, look what I have that I didn't have before, and they run. And just like these 9 lepers, they move forward. There's no point in going back because life is all about moving forward, and suddenly there's all this energy and there's all this passion around this new thing that has happened to them. And you almost can't blame them. They haven't been embraced by their family. They haven't been embraced by their children. So in some cases, they've never embraced their children. So of course, there's a lot to think about moving forward. And we wouldn't see this as a story about ingratitude or gratitude if one hadn't returned. The other interesting thing about the story is this. Don't you imagine, and I'm just making this part up, don't you imagine if we could have chased down the other nine and said to them, wait, before you get to the priest, aren't you grateful that Jesus healed you? What do you think they would say? What would they say? Yes, we're so grateful. We're so grateful we can't wait to tell our families. We can't wait to show the priest. In fact, when we see the priest, we're gonna say, and Jesus healed us. And next, you know, Saturday, we're gonna go to church and say, and Jesus healed us. And I mean, for the rest of our lives, our story is gonna be about the day that we met Jesus and Jesus healed us. They would say, are you kidding? Grateful? My heart is overflowing with gratitude. I'm feeling very grateful. I'm having many, many, many grateful thoughts. Meanwhile, Jesus is back with the one guy going, weren't there 10? And only one has returned, and he's not even Jewish. The other nine are going, this is like the greatest day of our life. Jesus is going, weren't there 10? Something's wrong. They have, this is why this is so hard to see. They have no earthly idea. It hasn't even crossed their mind that there's an unfinished loop. There's an unfinished cycle. There's something left undone. They have no idea. Meanwhile, Jesus and his disciples, weren't there 10? Why has only one returned to express gratitude? They have the same problem that we have. Here it is. They felt it. They just didn't express it. They felt it. They just didn't express it. Let me tell you what's going on in your relationships. You feel it, you just haven't expressed it. And that's what makes this so dangerous relationally. Because if you've told your boss how great your wife is, right? You've told your tennis partner how great your husband is, right? You've told your teacher how grateful you are for what your parents did for you. You know, you've told your dad about how grateful you are for your mom. You told your mom how great you've told everybody else. And because you feel it, but you just haven't expressed it. And somewhere in your life, there's somebody, and they won't say it in these words, obviously. Somewhere in your life and in my life, there's somebody standing around going, weren't there 10? And only one has come back to say thank you. Here's a principle. Here it is. Unexpressed gratitude communicates ingratitude. Isn't that true? Unexpressed gratitude is real gratitude. I really feel it. I really believe it. I really am grateful if you pin me in the corner and I start talking about it. Unexpressed gratitude is real gratitude, but unexpressed gratitude communicates the very opposite of what you think and what you feel. It communicates ingratitude. And just like the other nine lepers, we are so future-oriented, we're so forward-oriented, it's like, I got to get on with the next thing. Now that I have what I need, now that I have this opportunity, now that I have this job, you know, now that I have this education, now that I have this degree, now that I have this raise, now that I have it, it's all about the future. And if you were to stop me mid-sentence, I would tell you how grateful I feel. But unexpressed gratitude communicates ingratitude. But it's almost impossible to see this. Now, it gets worse. Unexpressed gratitude is actually a form of rejection. Unexpressed gratitude is actually a form of rejection. Now, all of you ladies who have cooked for children or a husband understand this, okay? Right? You know where I'm going. Because you decide to do the Big Mac Daddy meal, everybody's favorite, right? You shop, you grocery shop, you worked on it, you got home early from work, you know, you put all the time in the kitchen, you didn't watch Oprah that day. I mean, you were like hyper-focused, you're gonna get it right. And it's dinner time and you call the kids to dinner, or if your husband's there, you call your kids and husband to dinner. and tumbleweed blows through the house. You know, it's like no. Then you call them again, and you call them again, and finally you are angry, and you call them to supper, and finally they get there, and they sit down, and they're talking about whatever they were talking about before they got to the table, right? And somebody wants to turn on the television, and your husband or your older son or whoever says, well, let's just mute it, like they're kind of making a concession, you know? And everybody's focused, and they're eating, a lot, and they're eating fast because it's so good. And then, hey, may I be excused if you have one that does that? Or maybe they just get up and walk off, or, you know, your husband pulls out the mail or whatever, and you're seething, and they have no idea how mad you are. And they're, you know what? If you were to pause and say, hey, time out. Don't y'all appreciate mom? You know, don't you appreciate your wife doing this meal? Oh, yeah, high five, mom. You know, whoa, you know, it's awesome. But because nobody does that, the unexpressed gratitude, the feelings of gratitude, the thoughts of gratitude that go unexpressed, do you know what, mom? You know what your wife feels? She feels this right here. She feels rejection. And then everybody gets up and scatters. And there she is. And she's in a bad mood. And she doesn't want to be. And then, sir, if you're the husband, you ask the dumbest question a man could ask in a situation like that. You walk into the kitchen, and she's throwing stuff around in the dishwasher, and it's just louder than normal. And what do you ask? What's wrong, honey? And you're hoping the knives hadn't been sharpened that week, right? Because I'm telling you, and you have no idea because you didn't express it. And by not expressing it, you expressed the opposite. What you said was, we aren't thankful. After all, you're our mom. You're supposed to cook. You're my wife. You're supposed to cook. This is just your job. We're entitled. Leave us alone. We're going to open the mail and watch TV and do homework. And you feel something they never intended you to feel, but listen, this is the deal. It's real. It's real. And it goes both ways, doesn't it, men? Dad, can I have $20? Dad, can I have $40? Dad, there's a sale. Dad, my iTunes gift card's out. Dad, my computer's not at school. Dad, I need a car. Dad, I need tires. Dad, I need to get it jacked up. Dad, I need to go into the prom. I need a dress. I need. And you're just shelling out cash and the credit cards and cash and paying bills. And then your wife wants to go on a vacation because somebody went on a special vacation. And, you know, it's just cash. You're just like you're like an ATM machine. It's just going out. It's going out. It's going out. And you know what? And if you're the provider, and this can be a man or a woman, but let me just give a man a little break here. You know, you love being a provider. You love the fact that you can do things for your kids. You're so grateful that you have a job right now because some of your friends don't, and it's a whole different scenario. You're grateful for the job. You're grateful you can do things. But after a while, you just get madder and madder and madder. And if I were to stop your wife and say, hey, you're so lucky to have a husband that provides like that, she would go, oh, I'm so you know, she's so grateful, right? If I were to stop your son at school and go, dude, look what, you know, where'd you get that? This is awesome. And yeah, my old man, you know, and he took us on a deal and he's going to get me a car and and he's so cool. And now, you know, I'm grateful. But you never told your dad, you never told your husband. And do you know what he feels? Rejection. And you don't see it. Because ingratitude is almost impossible to see in the mirror. But here's the bottom line. If it isn't expressed, it doesn't exist. Case in point, Jesus. Weren't there 10? I mean, they're high-fiving and having a party. They're so grateful. Weren't there 10? Because unexpressed gratitude is the same as ingratitude. This goes from parents to kids, kids to parents, in-laws, at work. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on. And what we express is this. You're my son. You're supposed to do that. You're my employee. You're supposed to do that. You're my boss. Well, of course you make sure that happens. I mean, aren't I entitled to these things? And we would never say we're entitled. But by not saying thank you, the message we send is I'm entitled. And at the end of the day, unexpressed gratitude goes even further. Unexpressed gratitude actually has the same result or the same outcome as rejection. Now let me tell you about the people in your life. God made them this way. You're this way too, but you may have a hard time seeing this in the mirror as well. God created the people around you. He created all of us this way. God created us as acceptance magnets. We gravitate toward environments and relationships of acceptance. We are repelled by environments and relationships where we don't feel accepted. Men, the way we experience this, we don't compete in things we don't think we can win. Because winning feels like acceptance. Losing feels like rejection. I'll just sit out. Why? Because I don't think I can win. Now, we don't say that because we're too macho for that. But we very rarely compete in any arena where we don't think we can win. Why? Because winning feels like acceptance. And I am scared to death, and I am repelled by environments where there might be rejection. Unexpressed gratitude has the same effect as rejection. Over time, if you with your kids, you with your husband, you with your wife, you with your boss, you with the people that you work with, if you continually refuse to express gratitude, you drive, this is huge, you drive their hearts out of the relationship. He may still come home and go to his room, you know. She may still come home and cook and throw things around the kitchen and smile and, you know. But they may still come to work. But over time, unexpressed gratitude / ingratitude drives people's hearts out of the relationship. And if there's somebody on the other side of the relationship that's saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, you're so sensitive, you're so kind, you're so nice, you're so warm, you're so thoughtful, you're so thank you, thank you, thank you, little thank you note, little card, little thing. I'm telling you, that's where their hearts go. Because our hearts gravitate toward that kind of gratitude. So let me just ask you, then we'll wrap this up. As I'm saying all this, who's coming to mind? As I'm saying this, who are the people? You know, if I were to stop you, you'd say, oh, I'm so grateful, but you haven't expressed it, because unexpressed gratitude is ingratitude. Unexpressed gratitude is rejection. Unexpressed gratitude drives people's hearts out of the relationship over time and drives them to environments where somebody appreciates, doesn't feel entitled, and is willing to humble themselves and say, thank you. I know you're my boss, but still, thank you. I know you just think you should do this because you're the mom, or you should do this, but I just want you to know, even though you're the, quote, provider, I'm still, I know you do it every week, but I'm still, I know that you provide, you know, you fix lunch for me every day, mom, but I just want you to know, I'm grateful, because you don't have to do that. Last thing, going back to the Jesus thing. Gratitude, see, this is so important. And again, it's all so invisible, but you experience this all the time. Gratitude closes the loop. Gratitude closes the loop. Gratitude closes the loop in our relationships with God and others. It closes the loop. Now, let me illustrate this. You have all seen this, but again, when it's us, we can't see it. When it's others, it's clear. Have you ever, and many of you have, hopefully you remember this, most of you have been to a little kid's birthday party before. Little kid's birthday party, it's so interesting. It's mostly moms with the little kids, right? So in our pretend little kid birthday party, we have Billy, it's Billy's birthday, and we have Laura. Laura's Billy's friend. And the moms are sitting with him. And Laura gives Billy's birthday present. You know, let's see what it is, Billy. Billy rips it open, you know, it's a football. Yay, yay, yay. Now in that moment, Billy's mama realizes the loop isn't closed. And before Billy rips the football out of the box to go play with it, Billy's mom always asks the same question. It's four words. Starts with what? What do you say? What do you say? What do you say? What do you say? Now, why is mama going, what do you say? Because mama, as an outsider, realizes the loop has to be closed. Now, don't you run off play with that football. What do you say? What do you say? Help me, help me. What do you say? What do you say? Laura's over there, you know, what do you say? Because mama knows something's wrong. Here's how Jesus said it. Weren't there 10? And only one has returned? What do you say? What do you say? And, you know, Billy has no clue. Then she has to coach him. Say, thank you. And he says, thank you. It's like, oh. Why? Because you know intuitively, unexpressed gratitude is ingratitude. Unexpressed gratitude is rejection. Well, of course you gave me a football. It's my birthday. And over time, not instantly, over time, unexpressed gratitude can have the same impact as rejection. It chases a person's heart out of the relationship. Let me tell you, I wrote this down for me because I so many people do so many things for me. And again, this was my personal takeaway from my message. I put it in the first person for me. To refuse to pay my debts of gratitude is to live with an inflated view of myself. For me to refuse to pay my debts of gratitude, well, I'm busy, well, they understand, well, it's a big church, well, it's Sandra, well, it's my kids, well, of course, well, they work for me. And to refuse to pay my debts of gratitude is to live with an inflated view of myself. To live without gratitude, expressing our gratitude, is to live as if, of course they do that kind of thing. I'm entitled. It's to live with an inflated, they owe me view of myself. And for you to live with unexpressed gratitude in your marriage, with your children, your young children, your old children, your adult children, your grandchildren, is to live with an inflated view of yourself. You deserve it. Isn't this interesting? Isn't it interesting you've never met an arrogant person that's grateful? Isn't it interesting you've never met a humble person who's not extraordinarily grateful? Now, I don't know which comes first. I'm not that smart. I don't know if arrogant people just don't know they're supposed to say thank you, or by never saying thank you, we perceive them to be arrogant. I don't know if humble people and gracious people on purpose are just gracious and therefore we think they're humble, or they were just humble and they're, I don't know which comes first. But you've never met an arrogant, pretentious person that was constantly expressing their gratitude. Arrogant people live with a misunderstanding, a very inflated view of themselves. They think they don't need anybody and they think they got there on their own. But what every single person knows in their heart to be true, I don't care how smart you are, educated you are, wealthy you are, successful, here's what you know when the lights are off and it's just you. You didn't do this by yourself. You didn't do this by yourself. And the call of this passage, I think, for all of us is that we would be like the one. We would be returners. Here's what a returner is. A returner is someone who is willing to go back to those who enable them to move forward. That's what a returner is. It's someone who's willing to go back to those who enable them to go forward. And in your life and in my life, there are dozens of people because they invested in us, loved us, provided jobs for us, educations for us, opportunities for us, raises for us, the things for us. There are dozens and dozens of people in our past that without their help, we would not have been able to move forward. That was the case with the 10. None of the 10 lepers would have been able to move forward without Jesus, but only one was a returner. Only one went back to the one that enabled him to move forward with his life. So the question is, are you willing for the rest of your life and in your key relationships to be a returner? And if there's something that rises up on the inside of you that resists that, you should pay attention to that. Because that thing in you that doesn't want to say thank you, that doesn't want to go back, that doesn't want to write the thank you note, whatever it is that rises up inside of you, you need to pay attention to that. Because that's probably right at the center of where God wants to do something in your life. Because that's just pride. That's just pride. And did you know, for some of you in relationships, married relationships, significant other relationships, we were trying to move forward and moving toward marriage, and let me just tell you what, did you know simply making it the habit of your life to express what you feel in terms of gratitude may be the thing that saves your relationship? Because it's impossible to see in the mirror. And the only way to avoid becoming an ungrateful person is to become very proactive and decide, I'm gonna be the returner. I'm never gonna miss an opportunity to go back to those that have enabled me to move forward. I'm never gonna miss an opportunity to go back to those that have enabled me to move forward with my life. Now, on your way out today, we're gonna give you a little card. It looks like this. I think we can put that up on the screen. Yeah, it looks like this. We can go ahead and put it up there. It's great. There it is. I owe? I owe who? And here's what I want you to do. I want you to take this, and I want you to put it in your pocket, put it in your purse, put it in your wallet where you see it, and I want you to leave it there for at least a week. Some of you need to leave it there the rest of your life. Honestly, because this is a blind spot. You can't see it. You don't do this on purpose. It just is. And the I owe who card is a reminder. Oh, I owe someone a debt of gratitude. Who do I owe a debt of gratitude? Who do I owe a debt of gratitude at work? Who do I owe a debt of gratitude in the community? Who do I owe a debt of gratitude in my extended family? Who do I, because you know what? All of us, there are no exceptions. You don't have to be a religious person, a Christian person, you know, a person that believes anything. You know in your heart, you owe somebody, and you're a better person if you're a returner. You're a better person if you're willing to go back to those who have allowed you and enabled you and empowered you to move forward. Here's my question. Who's your question mark? Who do you owe? Who do you owe? And are you willing to be the one who takes the time to go back and say out loud what's already in your heart? Say out loud what you have felt 1,000 times. Say out loud what you've been too busy to say because you're always moving forward and haven't taken the time to move back. Now let me get personal. For some of you, and I love you, okay, I don't know all your names, but I love our church, and I want us to have great marriages. I want us to have great relationships with our kids and with our parents. I would like for our churches to be known as, wow, they love each other. I don't buy all the Jesus stuff, but oh my gosh, those people get along. You know, they love each other. And I'm just telling you, this issue may be a breakthrough issue for you. So for some of you, I want to challenge you, and you know who you are. When you get in the car to go home, before you crank the key, before she cranks the key, before he cranks the key, just reach over and say, and look at him in the eye. Take a deep breath and swallow your pride. Say, thank you. And then just fill in the blank with whatever comes to mind. Now, men, I know I'm with you. If I were you, let me tell you what I'm thinking, and maybe I'm cynical. I'm going, I can't do it today. She'll know I'm just doing it because you said to do it. I understand that. I'm telling you, Sandra would come up here and say, that's exactly what Andy would think. I'd have to wait about a month and say, you know, I've been thinking. I just had an idea. I just had an original thought again. Men, let me predict your future. If your wife has even average emotional intelligence, she will not say to you, you're just saying that because he said to say it. She will be so grateful. Ladies, some of you, your husband has served you and served you and served you, and you never say thank you. You never heard your dad say thank you. You never heard your mom say thank you. And in your heart, you don't feel like you're entitled, but you're acting like it. And all they know, they don't see your heart. They don't hear what you say to other people. They just hear what you don't say to them. I want to challenge you today to look in his eyes and say, thank you. And then you just say whatever comes to mind that you're grateful for. Kids, teenagers, I got 3. You live in a culture where you are made to feel so ridiculously, I don't use profanity or I was insert a word here, blankety blank, entitled. It's sickening. And it's not, students, it's not your fault. You didn't create culture, you just were born into one. That's not your fault. But you could be the returner. You could be that freaky teenager that actually says thank you to your parents. Oh my gosh. I mean, imagine where that could go, right? I'm not very good at that. It's a girl thing, I realize. Okay, but my point is this. Students, come on. You know this. You know this. I know you know this. Oh my, listen, your mom risked her life to bring you into the world. One day you'll understand that. Hopefully not anytime too soon, but one day you'll go, oh, my mom did this for me? Okay, yeah. But until that day, by faith, if you would just swallow your ridiculous pride that we all have, and look at your mom in the eye, and look your dad in the eye, or if you got to start with a note, write him a note. Don't text them, okay? Don't Facebook them, so love my mom. No. Just get personal and say, Mom, Dad, even if your parents are split up, they've done something for you. Like, students, Be a returner. Be a returner. Be the one. Finish the loop. Complete the circle. And do something unusual in your culture that says you don't owe anybody anything because they owe you everything. You don't have to fall for that. You don't have to believe that. You could be the one. So whatever's come to mind today, and let me just assure you, studying for this message, I mean, if you know, I got you through it 35 minutes. I've been working on it for days. Whew. Let me just tell you, why don't we decide we're going to be the one? We're going to be the returners. We're going to go back to those that have enabled us to move forward in whatever area it is in our life. And if we do, God will honor that, and God will honor that in those key relationships if we'll decide we are going to be the one. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, that's very convicting. None of us say thank you enough. There's not enough time to write all the notes that we should write. But Father, something came to mind. Somebody came to mind. Now give us the courage to act. And Father, I pray for all those cars that are going to sit in the parking lot for a few extra minutes. Do something miraculous. Break down barriers that have been there for so long, they don't even remember how they got there. And heal marriages and heal relationships between kids and their dads and their moms. Father, I pray for the teenagers here today whose dad lives in a different city, mom lives in a different city. Never heard this message, they're not ever going to hear it. I just pray that you would use the persistent gratitude of their kids to draw that relationship back to where it needs to be. And to, on behalf of all of us, Heavenly Father, I want to say thank you for sending your son Jesus into this world to die for our sins, to make these things possible, for preserving this story for 2,000 years for our benefit today. In Jesus' name, amen. Hey, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you next week.